This is the RightsCast Network at rightscast.net. Backstory, flashback, details about your character's world, culture, and language. It's hard enough to develop all of this, but when it comes time to convey it in our manuscripts, the real challenge begins. So how do we present this information in ways that are both effective and engaging while avoiding the use of that dreaded info dump? Hey there, I'm author, editor, and RightsCast Network founder R.R. Campbell, and welcome to episode 59 of your listener-supported R.R. Campbell RightsCast here on the RightsCast Network. Today's guest is Noelle Nichols, who helped us navigate the treacherous world of communicating backstory and other critical information. For listeners who are unfamiliar with Noelle, she's a writer, dreamer, and creator. She writes to make sense of the world, often giving her characters choices that rely heavily on moral choice. Her current series, The Shadows Creed Saga, was influenced by Japan's samurai and shinobi. When she isn't writing, she's painting or daydreaming on hikes. You can follow her adventures on her website, noellenichols.com. All right, let's get right into my R.R. Campbell RightsCast interview of author Noelle Nichols. Stay tuned afterward for updates on what you can expect from the RightsCast Network going forward. Thanks for listening. Thank you very much, Noelle Nichols, for joining me here for another episode of the R.R. Campbell RightsCast here on the RightsCast Network.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. I'm happy to be back.
Yeah, this should be an exciting episode. We're talking about something that I think is really important, and that is, of course, how do we convey information that readers need without it coming across as, dear reader, here is information I would like you to have. So we'll start by talking about it in terms of info dumps, and we should then, you know, circle back to explaining to our listeners, what is it that we're talking about when we use a word like info dump?
Yeah, so an info dump is, it's basically when you come across in reading, it's usually a wall of text. And it's a bunch of information that is not super relevant to the current point in the story. This is like backstory. This is like history. This is like your grandma's hair color for no reason at all. So that's basically what info dumping is. It's usually boring and a bunch of information that nobody really cares about. Sometimes you need to string it in, but usually it can be done in a better way.
Yeah, and I think the key phrase in what you've said there is this idea of information that's currently relevant. Because, of course, there are going to be times where we need to provide readers with details that might come across in that traditional tell over a show kind of way. And that's okay, so long as it's supporting the scene at hand. Would you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I would. I would definitely.
And that's kind of, I guess, the distinction we might be drawing then. You also framed it in terms of, you know, it might be a wall of text, for example, and we're getting kind of pulled from that immediate scene. We're getting into this sort of summary of, like you said, backstory, what have you, but it's all not especially relevant, and that is where we get into these info dumps. So with that in mind, you know, maybe let's build on that a little bit. Why should we avoid these info dumps, aside from the fact that it just creates a wall of text on the page?
So mainly I would say, I mean, this is one of the things that I hate info dumps. So when I say I don't care, like, I really mean, like, I don't want to know because I'm so enwrapped in the story that I just want to know what's happening. So I feel like it really pulls you out of, like, the moment and the magic that's happening, because sometimes these can go on for, like, a really long time. It's like, I don't need to know, like, all this history and stuff. And it's really more about what will serve your reader best. And I feel like it's mostly a failure on the author. Like, it's yourself. Like, you need to convey it in a way that's interesting and engaging. And it's not going to, again, leave the reader being like, okay, like, get on with it. Like, okay, maybe that one bit you said about maybe, like, the prophecy was important. But I was like, come on, let's keep going, because I'm anxious now.
Right. And I think something that's important to keep in mind when we're deciding whether now is the right moment to convey a particular piece of information has to do with tangibility and whether or not, again, what we're about to provide is related to the scene at hand. Because we could give readers a bunch of information, even that prophecy that you mentioned, this theoretical prophecy, it could be relevant to the story. It could be super important. But if readers don't quite yet have the context developed to understand its importance, they're less likely, I would argue, to remember the prophecy or to recognize that it's going to be important. And that's where striking this balance between an info dump and maybe trickling in information becomes so important.
Right, yeah, and that's again where you get into where this is the frustration is because if it's not relevant, I don't know that I need to care about it, so I feel frustrated, and then I'm going to end up being more frustrated because I missed out on this maybe foreshadowing or I'm missing out on this piece of information that I need to understand the story.
So if we're going to go ahead and treat these info dumps as something that we generally want to avoid, I think that's, you know, fair to put out into the universe. The natural question that follows then is, well, what can we as writers do to avoid putting info dumps in our text? What are some strategies that either you've deployed yourself or that you've seen others use in the wild in their own books, so to speak?
So I like to think about, again, we need to frame it in the mindset that you know your entire world, like you know everything that's going to happen, but you need to look through the lens of the reader and just remember that how can I actually do this in an engaging way? I know one of the really easy strategies is like have somebody put it in a narrative format or like more like a dialogue. So they're talking about this, maybe a character is actually bringing up this part and they're asking questions. That one's a little easier to see through because if said character doesn't know to ask this question, I see this a lot when I beta read. I was like, they have no idea to ask this question. This is you, the author, asking this character to just, you know, spout something. And so it's interesting because you need to do it in a way that all the characters would naturally know this information, and then they can actually have a scene that it's not, again, like an info dump hidden in a dialogue.
Yeah, that is a very common tool that I often see get used to try to convey information that authors think is important. It creates a conversation where rather than maybe feeling like a conversation, it comes across more like an interview where we have one character serving as the reader's proxy, so to speak. And there are certainly ways that we can get information on the page through dialogue. I mean, clearly we want to see our characters engaging with one another and the world around them. I think you're very spot on, though, in making the observation that when our characters are going to have these conversations, when they're going to question the world around them, we have to kind of meet them in the middle. Those questions and the conversation has to be motivated by something that's intrinsic to the world itself. We aren't going to have a character who has grown up in a particular society or under a particular set of rules asking out loud what the rules are if they've grown up with them and already know what the rules happen to be. They might question the validity of those rules, for example. They might question whether they are fair, and that could be a way to kind of give us the distance that we need while still presenting what those rules are. But if they're just kind of asking what the rules are in general, we lose that suspension of disbelief because presumably, having lived in that society, they're already familiar with these matters, for example.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's hard as an author to even sometimes be aware that you're doing it. Like sometimes it's really easy, but I know like if you're at that point where you feel like it's ready, I found that beta readers actually were really good because I tend to underwrite my stories, especially with world building. Like I know all the details, so I tend not to like give all these information about like the cultural stuff. And it's just nice having that second opinion of being someone like, I need more here because it's so sparse. And then if you do tend to be more of the oversharer, be like, hey, can you like cut this in half right for me?
And I'm glad you mentioned it in the context of beta readers as well, because something that is really apparent in this conversation and in my own experience as a writer and in being a beta reader and an editor for other folks is that we as writers, like you said earlier, we know the world that we're inhabiting. We've spent more time with it. We've spent more time with our characters than any of our readers will have at any point. And so I think it's a really great idea to say, hey, dear reader, you know, early reader, can you let me know if there are spots in here where you feel like you were drifting a little bit? Or were there places in here where you might have appreciated the information but didn't feel like what you were being given was appropriate for this particular passage? I think, at least in my view anyway, it's always fair to work with a subset of your beta readers by asking them those questions before they've read, so it's something they can kind of keep an eye on, and then maybe having another subset of your beta readers where you don't throw those questions out there just to see if it comes up to them naturally. I think that getting that diversity of opinion and then having one group that's maybe set to be on the prowl or on the hunt for these things and another that is just kind of let to have the experience of being a reader, that can be another way to see if we are stepping from the world of trickling information in into building a brick wall of information, for example.
With that, let's pause for a moment for a brief word from, well, me.
your book, Our Airwaves. Yes, it's true. Anything is possible when you advertise with the RightsCast Network. Hey there, I'm R.R. Campbell, RightsCast Network founder, and I'm here to let you know that you can now advertise your book, podcast, editing services, whatever creative endeavor, you can advertise it here on the RightsCast Network. Not only that, but you can advertise with us for less than $1 a month. Yes, we offer packages for as little as less than $1 a month. So get your book, your editing services, podcast, what have you, introduced to hundreds of new listeners by advertising with us today at rightscast.net/advertise or email me at rightscast@gmail.com and we can get started. Let's make it happen for you and your creative endeavors. That's your book, Our Airwaves, rightscast.net/advertise.
Right, yeah. And I've actually had the experience this time of having reader beta readers and having writer beta readers. So I have like writer friends and readers, and that's been interesting because, you know, the writers are more nitpicky about certain things and the readers are more interesting because they're the ones that are really trying to get that experience. So it's just an interesting little tidbit to think about.
And that's also a really great point, because if we enlist a bunch of readers, that's really great. Of course, those are the people who are presumably going to be reading our book, as our readers eventually will. But when we can get writers into our beta pool, we as writers kind of know the tricks that we like to employ at times. And then we can get some good feedback from people who have been in that situation, who might say, aha, I see what you are attempting to do here with this fun little dialogue trick. And sometimes they might say, I don't know if it's feeling quite motivated enough or organic enough. And other times they might say, I see what you're doing here, but I still really appreciate it because it's effective for reasons A, B, and C.
Right. Yeah. I mean, don't be lazy about it. It's what it comes down to. Like, do your due diligence, and it's always great being able to spitball like ideas on how to even like incorporate a scene that would naturally do it. And you don't always get it right the first time, so it's okay.
Yeah, and that's a really great thing to throw out into the universe here too. When we're drafting, in the very early stages of drafting, if you need to get that information on the page because you know you're going to need it for, say, your own memory later, or you just want an opportunity to kind of work it out sentence by sentence to see if it's cohesive or if you have any contradictions within your lore, for example, go ahead and throw it on the page. I mean, no one's going to read that, and maybe you want to put it in there just to let your early beta readers read it to see what really stands out to them so you can find an appropriate place to leave it later. The point is, the drafting stage, no judgment zone. You're the only person who's going to have eyes on it, and sometimes I find it's better to throw that information on the page the first time through so that it's there and you have a reference point, and then later you look at it and go, okay, I'm glad I know this. I'm glad I have it here as a nice reminder. Maybe I can snip this little bit. Maybe I can cut this little bit and stitch them in other places where it might be more appropriate to provide that information.
Yep, I totally agree. I do a lot of, like, when I'm writing and drafting, I do a lot of in comments. Like, I'll do little parentheses and I'll add comments to myself just to be like, okay, I want to make sure that this is getting, I'm getting this feel. I'm going to just, you know, like figure out something, because I world build as I write, which is a different technique. But I just need to like write out the rules for myself as I move forward, and then I transfer them for myself. But like, none of that stuff in my little parentheses ever stays, but it's good to kind of like, you know, have it set so I know where it's going, but that stuff, you know, it's all going to go out the door in editing.
Right, and I actually use a similar strategy. Rather than put things in parentheses, I might make notes to myself in all capital letters, because then it's going to stand out to me. I don't like to have a lot of capital letters screaming on the page, so when I see a block of capital letters, it's a sign that, all right, this is something I need to go back and revisit, because at the time I was writing it, I didn't quite have the state of mind that would allow me to execute this part of the scene. I will now touch this up.
Yeah, no, I love that. It's fun learning how to like sneakily do it from other writers, because everyone has their own way to do it. And it's fun as you write more, you kind of figure out all the super sneaky tricks of the trade.
Right. And everyone has such a personal style. I know some people will highlight in one color or another color or a set of colors to help themselves identify these spots and circle back to them. Really, it all comes down to whatever works for any individual writer. And I think that, you know, that's good. There's not really a one-size-fits-all solution to anything in the world of writing, and avoiding info dumps is no different. So with that in mind, though, I think maybe we can get a little more granular here and explore genre. perhaps. Do you feel that genre plays a role in how we approach info dumps, or do some genres seem to feature these info dumps more than others?
Yeah, so this one, I mean, we got to own up, guys. Like, the speculative fiction people, like science fiction, fantasy, for sure, like, definitely, because just because of the world building, like the culture, the magic systems, the scientific experiments, this is definitely, since we're not doing things that are in real life, this is really where you want to just kind of, you're tempted to just put it all down. You're like, I made this really cool thing. Now I'm going to explain my five ages of backstory, how, you know, this all happened, how this is done. And it's hard because that is definitely something that you need to explain, because again, you are taking the reader into this new world, but again, it's not all relevant. So definitely beware if you're creating something new, just how you're presenting this new information.
And that's where I think we start to see some divergent strategies for presenting world building information, both in science fiction and fantasy, and of course, speculative fiction in general. There's these, we'll make it a binary because I think it's easier to draw a contrast this way. There's this idea that we're going to have a sink or swim approach to world building, where we just kind of let our characters act in the world that they are inhabiting and readers just kind of catch on to the details as we go. And then there's this other side of things where we run the risk of being really info dumpy, and we might start off a chapter as, you know, our character's ship is landing on this planet, and now here are three paragraphs of Wikipedia information about this planet and its background and its economy, etc. Maybe all good information to know, but again, can we stitch it all in at places where it's appropriate? And then in that sink or swim approach, I'll throw these out into the universe as examples for folks who might be interested in reading books that take this approach. Something like Nine Fox Gambit, which is actually a really neat sort of military space opera. This book is by Yoon-Ha Lee. So really cool, like I said, military sci-fi, sort of like a space opera bent to it. And from the start, you're just kind of in the midst of battle. You figure out how the world has evolved and gotten to this point as you go. And at times, that can be a little tough. It might feel as though it's being inaccessible. But we're getting information in these nice little morsels that allow us to slowly become accustomed to the world. And before we know it, we're right there with our characters. And William Gibson's Neuromancer does this too, to a really vast extent. You're just with the world. Come on, everybody. We got to keep up. We don't have time for story. And then one final example I'm just thinking of right now is, imagine something like the A Song of Ice and Fire series or Game of Thrones by George R. R. Martin. We have the main series, right? But now we know that there's this book, Fire and Blood, out there that's got 300 years of history that takes place before the main series begins. Well, George did not go ahead and just say, all right, dear readers, before you can appreciate the main series, it's very important for you to read this thick 2-volume tome called Fire and Blood. Otherwise, you will not appreciate everything that went into getting the world to where it is today. We didn't need that. It came out later as a separate book that's interesting in its own right because it exists unto itself. But the main series, we didn't need 700 pages of info dump just to get into the main series.
Yeah, right. I like how you said, I was going to say it was like more of a stylistic approach. Like, there are definitely more styles that are more heavy on like telling. I'm currently actually reading The Tales of the Otori. Oh my gosh, I'm going to butcher the name. I think it's Leanne Herm or something. It's very difficult. We'll have to like put a link or something. But anyways, it's about a story about like in Japanese medieval times. And it's very telly in the way that the information is presented in a very strategic way, because these are these warlords that are having like, it's a warring country. So you need to know strategically how each person acts. Like, you need to know what they're thinking. And so it's basically these characters giving you this information because it is used in the present timeline to then make a strategy to defeat these people. And it's very interesting because it's more almost like an older style of writing, I would say, because I see that a lot more in older fiction, like Robin Hobb's Rainwild Chronicles was this really great story about like a culture of dragons. And so you were kind of experiencing what the dragons did and that they stored memories and how they did that. And it was really cool, but that was more active. And so this current series is kind of more telling what's already happened so you can make decisions. And my example is Ed McDonald's Blackwing, the Raven Marps series. this is again what you were saying about the sink or swim approach. So basically you are completely dropped into this world, which I love because it's like a game. You're dropped into this world where you don't know anything about the culture or what's happening. And you're basically introduced to the setting by the main character who hates this thing called the Misery. And you're like, what the heck is the Misery? And then it goes on to like, what is this magic system? It's very natural and you're very confused. And it's so cool because he drops in just enough detail to get you interested. And that's kind of, you know, the two different sides. You can either have like this really, really great thing where we're actually telling you about stuff and it's still engaging, or you can have more of like the game where it's like, I don't know what's happening, but I'm very interested to find out.
Four people, one study, the internet access brain implant to bind or destroy them all. Now available in print and ebook from author R.R. Campbell and Nine Star Press, it's Imminent Dawn, the first book in the epic empathy sci-fi saga. Learn more about the book reviewers are calling freaking sci-fi Game of Thrones and an incisive techno thriller that gets more tense with every page by visiting empathyseries.com. That's empathyseries.com. Right. And another thing that we might want to consider, you know, from our standpoint as writers when we're drafting or even in the pre-drafting stages, is asking ourselves, what's our readership going to look like, for example? So in the world of sci-fi, you might make the choice to write some pretty hard sci-fi where you're going to dive really deep into the science. I think something like Andy Weir's The Martian has a lot of chemistry on the page, at least to my memory anyway. And that stuff's really neat. But sometimes I was like, okay, cool, but I'm going to skip over this because though I can appreciate that what it's demonstrating about our character, I, as someone who does not have that chemistry background, it's not going to speak to me in the same way that it might someone who does have that background and might look at that and go, oh my goodness, what a genius idea. I look at it and go, oh, cool idea. That's a genius idea. But because I am not in that part of the target audience, I am not the hard sci-fi readership, I have an opportunity to kind of look at that and go, all right, I'll skip ahead here. But imagine if the entire book was just a constant slog of hard science and it started to read more like a textbook than an actual work of fiction. That's going to really push me, as someone who's not interested in reading hard science exploring that angle, that's just going to push me out of being part of the readership. And so I think we as writers have the opportunity in the early stages of drafting, or even once we get to revisions, to decide, okay, well, who do we really see reading this book? How are they going to experience the actual text? And at what points might I want to include information, or might I want to give a little bit of a break here for folks who aren't interested in, again, a hard sci-fi angle, if we're going to use that as our example. So again, we can rely on our own knowledge, who it is we want to target as readers, and then what our beta readers give us in terms of feedback to help decide what's been important or what is important, where we need to include it, where it's worth paring back, and what maybe isn't appropriate for this book at all.
Right. Yeah. And this is something that I've personally kind of struggled with, because I do write in more of an Asian world. And, you know, most of my readers are going to be generally in the U.S. at the present moment. So I had to really consider, it's like, okay, how much like language do I want to put in? Like, you know, I have like these samurai type characters, but I did not use any of the terminology, like, you know, just talking about, I didn't even use katana, like, even though that's a word that most people know is a Japanese sword. Like, I didn't use any of that stuff because I didn't want to bog the story down. And I really wanted to be conscious of, okay, these are people that like fantasy that are going to be reading this, but they don't want to, like, you know, be bogged down by all these words and stuff. So I kept it more in a very simplistic way, where you get kind of like a sense of the culture, but I'm not going to keep, you know, some people like it, some people don't, where you have like special words particular to like your world. But yeah, you know, you just get kind of caught up again. You know, you just want to make sure that it's easy to read whoever is going to read it. And you can definitely spin your magic in a way that's not like, I'm going to overload you with all my knowledge of, like, you know, world and stuff, and make it more fun for the reader.
Yeah, and I'm glad you're kind of touching on your own experience as a writer and how it is that you choose what to include and how you choose to shape it. And that has me curious more generally, you know, how have you found a balance between giving just enough information to readers without that becoming overbearing?
Yeah, so particularly with my series, the Shadows Creed Saga, it is a world where these characters are basically, like, I established their culture, but it's more in a sense, I like to think of it again like a game. Like, I do really like that sink or swim approach. I want to put you into the world, but I also have a situation where my characters are kind of not quite sure about the world themselves. So it comes across very natural because I introduce this magic system, but the characters themselves don't know about it. So anything that I then spin into the tale about magic is very new to the characters. So they're discovering it, they're wondering about it, and they're questioning everything that's happening because the world around them is changing. And this is all written in first person. So I have all these different characters with their different perspectives. And so I really get to, like, and this is so fun. I get to explore the culture through all kinds of different people. Like, some people like the creed that they adhere to. Some people don't. Some people think they should take the easy way out because, you know, you're dealing with these bad guys that are trying to, like, attack your city and stuff. And do we, again, like, do you choose the easy way? Do you choose the hard way? And, you know, it's touching on all these people's emotions. So I guess I write more like emotionally. So I like to kind of draw your own experience into it. So it's very much a game to me because I want to touch on things that is going to make you question the particular about this character. It's going to question whether you would do the same thing. So it's very engaging because I don't personally care about telling you all my backstory because nobody knows that at the present moment. Like, I don't even know. I feel like it's one of those things where I'm discovering it as my readers are. So it's this fun little game between me and the readers. Like, I'm giving you just enough information, and then my characters are going to discover something else, and then we'll go and figure out other things.
And it sounds too like the process that you've developed for yourself also gives you a lot of freedom in how you want to present your characters in the long term. You know, you're not necessarily boxing yourself into a corner by committing to hard chunks of backstory in book one that as you advance through your series, you're suddenly like, ah, bummer, you know, I feel like I've now made something canon that it made sense for the character at the time, at least in my view, but now you're down the road and you're like, you know, I probably didn't need to include it right then and there, and now I have to kind of live with it. You're giving yourself an opportunity to have a little more freedom, and I would say probably even a little more fun because the process remains, you know, invigorating. It remains a little more loose. You've got these opportunities in front of you to grow and discover the world, right alongside the way that your readers will eventually be put in that same position.
Right. Yeah, I think it's a little bit more. I mean, I guess I'm kind of one of the weird pantsers, people that world build as they go along and stuff. But it's interesting because I've heard that, like, some people, like the readers, are like, I didn't see that coming. I was like, honestly, I didn't either. I was like, I know that's weird for, like, an author to say, but it's like I just write. Like, it's a very stream of conscious. Like, it's very organic, and it's interesting because I see more kind of like structured world building as a little bit off-putting to me. Like, I mean, the big example I can say, and I know people are gonna be like, oh my gosh, how dare you? I'm not a super fan of J.R.R. Tolkien's work. I think he has way too much history in his story. I think he's a wonderful historian and he created wonderful worlds, but as a storyteller, I just really want to know. Like, I don't want that 70-page diversion from when Frodo has the ring to go off on a tangent. It's like, I just want the story. So again, this is very interesting to just see. Some people like it, some people don't.
Yeah, and again, it all comes down to that readership that we are looking to target. You know, what is, we have a story in mind. We might know what some of its comp titles are. I know comp titles are a whole nother discussion, of course, but we might know what reading we did inspired our work. And if we're going to reach out to those readers and say, hey, this might be something you enjoy because you enjoyed book X, Y, or Z, we might want to consider how we present this information. If we think that we have an opportunity to really tap into folks who love J.R.R. Tolkien, cool. Then we can go ahead and throw in that rich history in these big chunks. But I think that has fallen a little bit out of fashion. And if we're not looking to target those readers, then it's probably not worth throwing in those, like you said, 70 pages of history. So we, again, as writers, we're in a position where we can find solutions to all of this, and it all depends on the story that we are looking to tell and the manner in which we would like to tell it. So with that in mind, Noelle, I don't know if you have any final words on info dumps or on stitching in information about our world that you would like to leave listeners with, but now is a great time to share that if you do.
Yeah, I would just, again, I feel like I always say this, but I would just say that, again, find like your own way. 'Cause I know when I was first starting out writing is I would like, listen to all these kind of things about how to avoid the info dump or like even like all the other cardinal sins of writing in air quotes. I always felt like very constricted. Like I felt like if I didn't follow this advice then I couldn't write books and stuff. And it's really more about the discovery about writing. It's about figuring out how can you, like I remember one of the things I was so bent out of shape about is how do you describe a character that's in first person perspective? How do you describe that character without doing, I'm looking into a mirror and I have this image kind of thing? Like I was very beaten down by all these rules and stuff. And it's not the point of what these are. This is just to have a discussion, to discuss strategies and stuff. So, and again, if you like writing more like historical stuff with all this facts and stuff, like it's not wrong by any means. But there are different options, and if you want to explore them, that's really what these are about. So I just want to let that out into the universe just to, discover how you write and just, create stories that you love.
A great note to leave it on. Well, thank you very much, Noelle, for joining me for another episode of the R.R. Campbell Writes Cast here on the Writes Cast Network.
Thank you so much, Ryan.
That's all, folks, or at least that's all for this episode anyway. Thanks to Noelle Nichols for joining me, and thanks to you, dear listeners, for tuning in. Of course, the WritesCast Network wouldn't be where it is today without the support of its patrons at patreon.com/WritesCast. WritesCast Network patrons get great patron rewards in exchange for their support of our programming at either $1, $2, or $3 per episode or per month. WritesCast patrons get early, ad-free access to every episode of our programming, and at the higher levels of support, they even get free, partial manuscript critiques from yours truly. Patrons like Kristen Oakley and the amazing Laura Hazen are a huge part of the network's march to becoming self-sustaining, so thank you, Kristen and Laura, for that. If you'd like to become a WritesCast Network patron, you can pledge your support at patreon.com/WritesCast. That's patreon.com/WritesCast. Next up on the WritesCast Network is a Novel Approaches episode all about prologues and epilogues. Join me and fellow editor Sione Ashleman on June 14th, 2019 for that episode. Then later this month, I'll talk all things horror with author Michael G. Williams, so stay tuned for that as well. Until those episodes debut, you can find us online at WritesCast.net, of course, or on Twitter as WritesCast. And I can be found on my author website at rrcampbellwrites.com or on Twitter as I am R.R. Campbell. That's all for now. Until next week, this is R.R. Campbell signing off. Write on and write well. This is the WritesCast Network at WritesCast.net.